SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Happy Thurby. You got to now throw that in. Happy Thurby, Happy Oaks, Happy Derby. Everybody was happy except for Brad Cox. if you've seen the video I put up, I've been doing this, I don't know, 20 years. Close to 20 years, been coming for 22 years, three. We've never seen a Derby horse get loose, but we did today. verifying around the 5/8 pole out of the view. I mean, as I've mentioned, I'm these mornings now. Not up high, so the alarms go off during the Derby Oaks training session, which, of course, immediately, puts up the the hackles. You're thinking, who is this? What? Oh, my gosh. And, there's, at that particular juncture, there was about 10 minutes in to the session. So, you know, pretty much all the horses that were going to be out were out. And saw Greg Blasi coming up the stretch toward the turn for home, and he was on the radio already, and he said he's coming this way, and he's on the outside rail. I mean, I just heard him, you know, there's nobody in the stands where we were, and I picked up the video pretty much as he came off the turn. And what was interesting, and you might have noted if you saw the tweet I put up, when verifying broke off, he broke off right in front of me, and I couldn't get the camera up because I was kind of going back and forth, you know, horses coming out and horses getting started. And I made a note that he was hyper. And so it was funny when he came into view and I realized it was him, I kind of shook my head and I said he was, you know, really keyed up, it seemed, when he started his gallop. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing a workout. Part of it might have been, it was a nice, crisp, dry morning. And you can see in the air, even on the video. So when it's cool in the mornings, horses are feeling good. And, of course, these horses are at peak fitness. So all it takes is them to just, something catch their eye. And for them to duck out and come out from underneath a rider. No sooner did things calm down, actually. And I was putting the video up, the alarm goes off again. And this one's almost funny. I mean, it's always alarming and very dangerous. I mean, if horses go running out of the gaps and get onto pavement, they invariably slide on the pavement and fall down and scrape themselves up. It didn't appear, still waiting for certain confirmations from the backside, but it just didn't seem like this was more than a half-mile jaunt for verifying. But as they were bringing verifying back, and tell me no lies, the Peter Miller filly, she did the same thing. She dropped her rider and took off, and as horses will do, ran right back to her barn and went right to her stall where they feel the most secure. And what's funny about it is she's only been here like 10 minutes. and so I don't know if she had Waze going on her phone, but she got right to her stall. So they open the webbing. No, they clean her up. So a little bit of excitement on this Thurby morning. In terms of the other workouts, we'll just the regular work. I keep saying, you know, I say workout, the work that these horses do in the morning as they gallop into their assignments. And, of course, we're 24 hours away from the Oaks assignments, and the terrific Oaks card, which we will, might as well reach right now for Nick Tamaro and get started. Nick's going to join us first, and let me give you the lineup as we reach for Nick. It's going to be a busy, really, today and tomorrow, of course. You know how it works. 12 to 15-minute segments, bang, 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 and we will rifle through a lot of analysis and selections, and Nick will start us off. Brad Free is going to join us in about 15 minutes or so. Brad is specifically, in addition to his Derby and Oaks picks, I've asked Brad for a $3 three-year-old pick three play with a budget of between $72 and $108, and we'll get that from Nick Tamaro tomorrow as well. When it comes to Saturday, Marty McGee with his final appearance as a turf rider. He'll appear guaranteed down the road, but as a turf rider for the Daily Racing Form, Marty's last appearance. He will appear with me Saturday on the NBC show between 2 and 5. So it won't be the last conversation we have, but his last day as a turf rider, he'll share some time with us. Andy Serling on his way to Louisville. And, of course, Andy's a robust traveler. He's a regular Vasco da Gama. Jay Privman later. And Dick Powell's going to be here. Scott Shapiro before the race day starts. Rich Eng later. And much, much more. Let's get Nick Tamaro going in here and get into the Friday card. I've done my work, and I'm pretty close. I think I've written up 8 of the races. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, listen, I feel like I feel like a teenage girl with my viral video.
Well, you should. I didn't know you went viral, but somebody of your caliber certainly could.
I've had maybe 2 or 3, and it's funny. I think actually there was a loose horse video a couple of years ago. So I guess I'm the official videographer of loose horses.
They have you around for a variety of reasons. That is now among them.
Chuck Simon texted me. He said, you're the TMZ of, of racing.
So maybe Chad Brown had it wrong. You're actually the Perez Hilton of racing, not Ray Pollock.
If that's the comparison, I'm certainly cheerier.
No question.
Nick, let's get into this Friday card. And I don't know if you heard me with KK yesterday. What is your feeling? Because it seems to me that the Friday card is more chock full of opportunities.
I think that's probably right. We've got some shorter priced horses on Saturday, so that's probably right. There are some chalky races on Friday, but not a ton of them, and you do have some pretty some totally wide open races. Like, I think the Edgewood is very wide open, much like the American Turf on Saturday. And I guess it depends on your take on a race like the La Troyenne. Do you think the La Troyenne is pretty wide open? I do. I picked the favorite, but I think it's got some opportunity. So yeah, I think I could agree with that.
All right, let's do you mind rifling through the first portion of the card, the early pick five, actually, and we can kind of bog down a little bit on the stakes.
Yeah, I actually probably liked the non-stake undercard races on Friday, on
yes.
Saturday, a little bit better than Friday.
Interesting.
But actually, the Friday ones are good, too. I think I'm more interested in watching the Saturday ones, especially that Echo Again Federal Judge allowance race. But yeah, going to the first. So the first is a maiden special weight race at a mile and a 16th. I didn't have anything overly clever here. I picked Cantea, the 7, for Kenny McPeak, who I thought probably was on a dead rail last time out at Keeneland, and finished behind Curl Girl, who is going to be the favorite in an allowance race later on in this card. She improved enough at second asking to be a threat third time out. I thought she'd be a decent enough price, so I didn't have anything super clever there. Destined to Race beat her last time at 22-1. I figure if you like Cantea, you don't have to like Destined to Race, because the reason you like Cantea is because she was stuck inside, but still, I would probably use both. The second race is a nice one other than at 6.5 furlongs, and it really brings together some horses that are up and coming versus some that have now established themselves against stakes company. Undervalued asset for what it's worth has been training with a seed who's running in the eight bells later on in this card and has apparently been getting the better of her. So I think you want to give her a long, long look. First time Lasix, coming in off of Devona Dale where she was too far inside. It was a day, like most days at Gulfstream, where you want to be outside. And so I think she was hurt by that. Vava ran way too well last time out to not be given pretty serious consideration here for Cherie DeVoe staying in allowance company. So I kind of liked those two. I thought that that Padma was a little dangerous getting back to the dirt. Lasix on for Beaumont coming back off a short layoff. Grove was a really, really solid first out winner for Norm Cassie. Got a thoroughbred figure that would make her very competitive. So yeah, this feels like a kind of a spread race.
This is a really fun race, and there's an unusual circumstance. When I went through it, I put Padma, my write-up's not done yet. It'll be done after the show, actually mid-afternoon, because I've got some taping to do right after the show. But I put Padma in capital letters. This is a triple whammy plus the Lasix, dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt. And I can't resist this. Fitz Jr. Alvarado nicely getting back to the 6.5. Grove, obviously, undervalued asset in Vava. But I'll tell you, there's a horse that is ridiculously priced, and that's Irvadine at 30-1. It's just preposterous off that debut. That debut is as good as any of the other horses. There's four horses making second career starts here, and Irvadine at 30-1. Dallas Stewart, if I reach back to yesterday, don't get caught watching Dallas, hit the board.
Yeah, I'm not sure why this horse was 30-1. That feels a little high, a little more than a little high, probably. So, yeah, no, I agree. I would find a way to include, maybe at least as a bid player, not as a win candidate.
There you go. Third is a second level allowance. And again, I thought there was an overlay, especially because, two of the players are out posted here going a mile on the grass. But Smoke and Tea inside 6-1, sign me up.
Yeah, I had no issue with that horse at all. Good effort last out. Obviously, competition-wise, you look at who this horse has been running against. Going back to last year's Manila, Annapolis, Wolfie's Dynaghost, Up to the Max, Olympic Runner. These are real horses. So this colt's been facing good company. He gets a good inside draw. I agree. I thought he had a real look to him. I picked Whisper Knot. I don't love this pick. I don't love this race, to be perfectly honest. This horse did have a lousy trip last time out. He took some real money, too, off the layoff. But Brendan's running him for the tag, and it's obvious he's seen better days. I don't know. I didn't have a strong opinion. I picked Point Me By in there as well. I thought he improved last out with more speed. I don't know really if Irad is a great fit for him because he looks like he's probably better when he's forward. So that was kind of my thought there. Not a race that I'm tremendously looking forward to. The fourth, however, is, I think the fourth is a really good race, and it's a super, super wide open race.
Yeah.
One where I think it's very hard to garner a strong opinion in here. I went to the outside to Into Disco.
Me too.
For Riley Mott. Yeah, steady improvement. This is a filly who probably had potential. She's now reaching it finally and has that good stalking style. I think she can sit out there and just wait and pounce when ready. I thought Fanny and Freddie was a little dangerous as well. I know she beat probably a little bit lesser last time out, but I'll tell you this much. It looks like Al Stahl is quietly ready for a very solid weekend, and Al can run very streaky. So it's got a lot of horses that are coming into these races looking like they might be sitting on big efforts.
I don't disagree at all. I put Into Disco on top myself. 6-1 was attractive. Not so close. Hardy Constitution. Music Street at 8-1 I thought was a little interesting, and I was struggling with Ben Colebrook using the 10-pound bug on a big day. How about this with Jump Into the Fire?
Yeah, Yoel Navas, the 10-pound bug, rode this mare to a win last time out, and he's going to show him some loyalty. He did about the best thing a bug jockey can do, which is open up and hang on. So, if the opportunity avails itself again, don't be surprised if they take the exact same tactics with his daughter, Run Happy.
The first graded stake of the weekend comes at 12:43. on Friday. And that's the Ali Sheba. And oh, let's see. It's got the Pegasus winner. It's got the Horse of the Meat from Oaklawn. It's got, last year's Derby winner. It's a crazy group of seven. And I spent way too much time on this race to end up picking the 2-1 favorite.
Yeah, and you kind of reach the conclusion that this is really an Art Collector West Willpower showdown. I know Last Samurai looks like he's in very good form. I'm going to need him to run as well as he did at Oakland somewhere else first. I know he might, and he didn't run that badly in the Pegasus, but he looks like he might be a little bit better with Lasix. He's probably a little bit better at Oakland, and he doesn't get either of those here. So the interesting thing about this race, Steve, is that in the first 100 yards or so, Junior Alvarado is going to have a decision to make, because either he's going to go to the lead and they're going to try and dictate terms on Art Collector, or he is going to get stuck in exactly the same spot he was last time, which clearly didn't work well for Art Collector. He did not like being pocketed up, and when he finally was, when he saw some daylight, he did not fire. So I think that it's a conceivable scenario that Art Collector showing speed is probably what both his connections and West Willpower want, because West Willpower switched off and rated so comfortably last time. And that's kind of a Flavian Pratt thing. He has this ability with a lot of horses to get them to really, really calm themselves and pounce when ready. And this guy was way better last time than he's ever been before, in my opinion. Now, he's Lasix off as well, but he's run well without Lasix, so I'm not all that worried about that. I agree with you. It looks like the two favorites. Always fun to have the Derby winner back, but I imagine he's going to need at least a race here.
And seems to be working well and just loves this racetrack. Let's go to the Modesty. And for those of you, by the way, that haven't absorbed the menu, the betting menu, a typical pick five in the first race, a pick four in the second race. But be aware that races three and four, they start another pick five and pick four. The sixth is the 20-cent Derby City pick six, and the Rolling High Fives, which is new to Churchill this meet. The Modesty, a refugee from Arlington, and I got wind yesterday, actually, of the horseman's nickname for the new first turn structure. They're calling it Little Arlington. The Modesty, it's very funny. And actually, once I heard that term, Ian Wilkes mentioned it, you realize why with that sort of high arch.
The overhang.
The overhang. Exactly. It's very funny. This race, in passing after the draw Tuesday, I made it out to be, Brendan Walsh versus Chad Brown. But then all of a sudden, not only did I notice Nacho Correas, he got a big hug from him yesterday on the racetrack, and Didia, it doesn't seem impossible to mix it up with Brown and Walsh.
Yeah, Didia is super dangerous. Her last race was good. She had a very soft trip. I don't know what to make of Fairgrounds turf form, but it's hard to poke holes in it. I mean, she ran well. She's run well now all three times. She has not exactly faced weak horses either. I mean, she beat Alms in that stake race to Colonial last year, who, maybe she wasn't vintage Alms, the best we'd ever seen, but she was obviously a very solid stakes caliber mare. And so, yeah, there's real upside there. The other thing about Chad's horses is that, Shantisar is coming off the Hillsboro. That was a weaker than par Hillsboro. She had a very soft trip, forwardly placed. That was a with Lasix race. So, there's reason to be doubtful there. And McCulloch is coming back off a layoff. And, let's not kid ourselves. I like McCulloch. I think she's a really nice filly. But she was awful in the QE2. I mean, she had no excuse whatsoever. And she didn't cut into Gina Romantica's margin at all. And if you had told Chad Brown before the race that he was going to be in a desperate photo for second with Bella Bell, he would have been very disappointed. So maybe McCulloch wants more ground when push comes to shove. This is just a starting off point. But, yeah, I agree. I'd be using at least as much Didia as either of the Chad horses. And then New Year's Eve, the race you come back to is last year's Edgewood. And you wonder if this is one of those situations where she's just a little bit more comfortable at Churchill than anywhere else, which, is not surprising given Brendan Walsh's barn success at Churchill. She doesn't come in looking all that scary, but she probably needed her last race. And Brendan's very good second off the layoff. Her bullet workout at Churchill on April 30th signals her readiness. So, yeah, it'd be those four for me.
Yeah, I do have to at least bring up Lady Rockstar. I know we don't need to get bogged down, but you know, she hasn't won since last let's call it spring. She turned up at Churchill Derby Day and first North America and was a winner. It looks like she announced herself, came back in New York in a second level allowance Belmont weekend, and wins again, and then has been, I mean, just, you know, not a factor while running okay and picking up, you know, minor shares, got put away and freshened up. Blinkers go on. It's not like Brendan Walsh has a big, he's got a positive ROI, which is interesting, with a lot of horses. 57, these are DRF stats, 57 blinker on efforts, winning at 14%, but with a positive ROI. And I Lady Rockstar, Brendan Walsh is very clever. This is a little problematic about how to handle her.
Yeah, I don't think she's good enough, but I wonder if there might be a little more there that they could get out of her. I don't know if the blinkers are going to do it, but yeah, I was at Monmouth when she was favored in the Matchmaker last year, and I was saying to myself, this is absolute insanity that this horse is favored, especially with the Chad horses that were in there and Vigilante's Way. But yeah, I wonder. I wouldn't use her as much more than a C, but you never
exactly
know.
That's exactly my thinking as well. Let's get to the eight bells, and the eight bells slightly corresponds to the Pat Day Mile, but this is no Pat Day Mile. You do have a number of turnbacks that you know need to at least be looked at, but this is all about Money's Gold and you know how good she may be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the anti-Money's Gold case focuses on the fact that, I mean, Todd Pletcher has looked absolutely for the path of least resistance for this filly right from the start. I mean, if he wanted to test her, she could have been in a variety of different races in each of her first two starts of 2023. And I understand why he didn't. He likely wanted to get her on a long-range path to run in some of the meaningful races in this division, which starts with this. And likely includes the test and, you know, those kind of races along the way. She is a filly who's never raced without Lasix. Todd is 1-for-9 off of Lasix in graded stakes on dirt and sprints, $1.13 ROI. So that's, you know, part of the knocks. These obviously are considerably better horses than she's ever faced before. But with that said, I mean, speed figure wise, she absolutely lays over this field. And the only thing you'd want to see from a speed figure perspective is that, at least according to Timeform US, she has been involved in slow paces in each of her first three starts. So she's going to face a much, much stronger test pace-wise. I had to be a smartass and pick Olivia Twist. She's just my kind of cutback, especially because she showed a little bit more tactical speed last time and really stayed on nicely the whole way. She's going to need a lot to go her way. But I will try and sneak her into the number with Money's Gold, who's clearly the horse to beat. Red Carpet Ready is dangerous as well. Obviously a little bit better at Churchill and certainly capable of being ready off this brief freshening for Rusty. So it's a fun race because you really want to find out how good Money's Gold is.
Exactly. Pick five starts in this race, too. 7-11, ending with the Oaks. The Unbridled Sydney starts a pick four. It is a turf sprint where Caravel, Brad Cox, kind of dialing back with her and putting her back against her own kind. And there's the usual cast of characters in here, but there's some very attractive prices. I'm very curious what you did in here.
Yeah. You know, you're going to be disappointed because as much as I tried, I didn't find anybody who could beat Caravel.
All right.
So, you know, all of these horses coming out of the Giants, Causeway, Ouvra, Little Jewel, Miner's Queen, and they all ran fine. But they have to step up a lot, and Caravel has to really show up with her second-rate stuff. You know, a Baystorm on the inside looks like she's got the wrong running style. Salvaje is slow. You know, you go through this field and it's very hard to find anybody that could really put a scare into her. And, you know, hats off to Caravel. She has gotten a lot better in her last, basically her last three starts. And you look at the speed figures and you really see it. And, you know, she had no reason to win last time out, given the way they were swarming in on her late. And she just really dug in. She knows how to win. And I think she'll end up finding a way to beat this field.
All right. Fair enough. Unbridled Sydney. We get to the grade one La Troyenne, another pick five. This pick five ends with the rest of the card, races 12 and 13 after the Oaks. It also starts the $1 two-day pick six. And, of course, as we talked with Gary Pomisano the other morning, this is a revised denomination. The $1 should put the spurs to this bet. You're looking at the La Troyenne and the Oaks. Then into Saturday, the Derby City Distaff, where Goodnight Olive will be probably 3 to 5. And then the three grade ones that end the Saturday card among the stakes, the Churchill Downs, the Turf Classic, and the Kentucky Derby. Those are the six grade ones to tie together for a buck. Is it a bet you're going to make?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Just because, you know, I don't think you have to go terribly wide here. I can probably get out of the Oaks with two or three at most. I think Goodnight Olive's a single. I don't know how much help Cody's Wish needs. I think the Old Forester turf race is a mess. And obviously the Derby, I'd like to be alive to four. So, yeah, I think it's affordable at that price point. So hats off to Churchill for revising the wager a little bit to make it a little bit more approachable.
Well, if you single Goodnight Olive and Cody's Wish, and I don't know, you go 6x4 Oaks and Derby, and who are you using in this La Troyenne? Because, yes, Secret Oath is here, but, you know, search results, trying to pull things together and get the season going. But then you got horses like I thought that were interesting, like Society and Pauline's Pearl for Asmussen. He's been deadly in this kind of a spot. Moray, who went out and got the grade one Beholder Mile, I played hard. Phil Bauer, it seems like he's not impossible. I thought this was trickier than you're making out.
No, this race is tough. I mean, I'd be a minimum of four deep here. And that doesn't include Play Harder Society. So, you know, and those are the two speeds. I would be mainly 2, 4, 9, 10, but, I don't know exactly what to do with search results. My problem with search results 2022 is that her two worst races were her first race of 2022 and her last race of 2022. So I get concerned about whether she might be ready off the layoff. And then boy, it's hard to take her off that Breeders' Cup Distaff. So they're back because they know that she can get a grade one potentially and another one. And that just makes her more valuable, obviously. They also knew that this division was going to thin out a little bit. So she's very dangerous. So Secret Oath. You know, has Secret Oath's improvement in 2023 been about Lasix? I don't think so. I think it's been about her probably just being a better filly at four than she is at three. This happens all the time. I understand Wayne's horses look like they're running a little bit better at Oaklawn than they do anywhere else. So, you know, you want to be a little bit critical. This is a relatively short comeback, not nearly as quick as that of Last Samurai. And then you have Pauline's Pearl, who won this race last year. It was a two-time winner of the Houston Ladies Classic. She was horrible in California, but, you know, that happened in California. I don't really want to hold that against her. A Moray, who, you know, I mean, how she's gotten this good is beyond me. I thought this horse was nothing but a mediocrity, but Brad Cox has unlocked her, that's for sure. He has found what works with her, and, you know, she figures to get that ideal Florent Giroux outside stalking trip, right? She should be third, set up, chasing, and she'll get the jump on all the deeper closers. So, yeah, I can't really separate those four all that well. And, I mean, I obviously excluded Played Hard, who is a graded stake winner over the track. And I think it's undeniable that Phil Bauer's horses run best at Churchill. Phil Bauer's a terrific trainer whose horses run well at Saratoga and a variety of other places. But I feel like they've really been at their best at Churchill, especially this mare who won two graded stakes at Churchill last year. And, you know, I got to tell you, Steve, a horse like 63 Caliber, who was just such a no-show at Sam Houston, I think that had to have something to do with the wet track. And that was not a that was not a standard kind of wet track. That was a harrowed, muddy track. It was very peanut buttery. You know, you could give her an excuse. She's come back and trained really well. Her Cumley two back was every bit as good enough as Amore's last race. So, yeah, this is a super contentious race, and I think one where if you're playing that wager and you are going to try and take the easy way out with Goodnight Olive and Cody's Wish, you're going to go wide here.
How about the Edgewood? And this starts the last pick four, 10, 11, 12, 13. Happened to have spent a little bit of time this morning with Davey Carroll and Mark Cassie, and I asked about Papilio, who really announced herself smashingly, the Star Spangled Banner filly for DJ Stable and Partners, and feels like she's the place to start, 7-2.
Yeah, very dangerous, no doubt about it. Good improvement. Second time in North America. She showed plenty in her North American debut, being a good second to Dance Macabre, who, of course,
just
came
won.
Back and won the stake race yesterday. The horse you want to bet out of that race, though, out of the Here Comes the Bride, is Revelita. So Revelita was compromised at the start, ended up going extremely wide around the turn. She was absolutely flying late and ran out of real estate. So, you know, in a more conventionally run race with a decent early pace, I think Revelita is extremely dangerous. Her stablemate preliminary, you know, the interesting thing is that Irad Ortiz Jr. has been on Cairo Consort in four straight races and won two stakes, including a graded one, and he opted to ride preliminary. So there's something there with preliminary as well, who ran very well on debut herself. So, yeah, those two and Papilio look like all I needed. Flashy Gem, a little dangerous. Brad Cox, synthetic to turf and routes, 44%, 271 ROI. This one feels like she's going straight to the front, too.
The Kentucky Oaks, Nick Tamaro, how'd you we haven't discussed this at all. What'd you land?
Yeah, intra-race, I'm going to play Wet Paint over the Ellis Look and Defining Purpose. And as far as the multis go, I'll use Wet Paint as an A. I'll use those two as backups, and I'll sprinkle in a little bit of Pretty Mischievous and Botanical. And if the winner comes from anybody outside of those five, I'll lose. I don't have anybody else I particularly like, and I'm looking forward to betting Wet Paint over those two fillies, who I think will each be somewhat forwardly placed, and maybe she ends up running them down. You know, I understand the knocks on Wet Paint. She's an off-the-pace filly that's never had a stronger path, but she seems to be able to make her own luck with that style, which you just don't find all that often. And so until something more clever pops in my head, all the voices in my head seem to have aligned on the Wet Paint so far.
Very good. So Wet Paint with a little 211, and if people are going to play the Oaks Derby Double or the Oaks Forster Turf
Get
Classic.
Your bourbons right, Steve.
Just not a bourbon guy. The Turf Classic. Give us your Oaks Turf Classic Derby pick three.
Yeah, I would be. You know, I'd be mainly seven here, and then as far as the Turf Classic goes, and probably, I mean, in totality, I'd be 3, 5, 7, 8, 10 there. But obviously, I would grade those out a little bit, and then in the Derby, I just want to get alive to my four horses. My four horses are two fills, Dermasotagake, Tapit Trice, and Angel of Empire. If I get alive to those four, I am very comfortable.
Those are my four, pretty much. Dermasotagake kind of bubbling up a little bit for me, just as a cover. So you and I are basically going to end the weekend in the same boat. Excellent. Nick, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel. Might have Scully with you to kind of bounce off each other, and I appreciate it. And of course, Belmont kicks off today. And you doing any Belmont? What's your Belmont? You're doing the Belmont coverage, right?
Oh yeah, and themoneypodcast.com. My picks are up for opening day at Belmont. Ready to roll.
Outstanding, Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM 1215. Back again tomorrow to look at the Saturday action. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
Nick Tamaro, folks, and I like how, you know, Nick's a home team guy when it comes to SHRP. He's given the he got multiple Houston Ladies Classic references into the discussion. Let's get Brad Free in here, because we're already in trouble. It doesn't take long these 2 days, but Brad Free, of course, the Daily Racing Form, and we're going to survey all the DRF team. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Outstanding. Brad, let's dive right in. And I did ask you to look at the $3 three-year-old pick three, but let's start with the two features, the 149th Derby, 149 Oaks. Your Derby thoughts?
Well, I like a horse in the Derby. I don't know if he's good enough, but I am convinced that he is going to run the race of his career on Saturday. I've been following this colt since last summer when he ran third in the Del Mar Futurity. And as a three-year-old, Skinner has gotten progressively better in his races and his workouts. He has been crying for a mile and one quarter. I have nothing but confidence in trainer John Shearer. So I look for Skinner to run a terrific race, and we'll find out if he is good enough. He's listed at 20-1, which I think is kind of a pipe dream. David Aragona in Daily Racing Form has him pegged as a 12-1 shot. I think that's a little bit more realistic. But I like Skinner to win the Kentucky Derby. Among the many hurdles he must overcome is that the pace scenario of this year's Derby is a little bit on the tepid side, and Skinner's going to come from the back half of the field. So I'm not sure how new jockey Juan Hernandez is going to work out a trip, and I do much certain that the pace is going to flatter his closing style. But at the price, I can overlook some of those potential imperfections. And I like Skinner to spring an upset in what looks like another wide-open Derby. But at the big number, I like Skinner to deliver on Saturday.
And potentially give John Sheriff's his second Kentucky Derby to go with Giacomo. And this horse seems to be on a very similar trajectory. You mentioned the jock change. I saw some chatter overnight on social media, Brad, about the move to Juan Hernandez, and some people kind of scoffing at Hernandez as a big day rider, his riding title at Santa Anita is notwithstanding. Let's face a reality here. I mean, Victor Espinoza is at this stage in his career loses too much ground than can be afforded in a race like this. And isn't this decision all about that?
It has to be. I mean, listen, Victor Espinoza has had a fantastic career. He's won a couple of Kentucky Derbies. But this jockey change was, maybe you could say, it was overdue. Skinner lost ground in both of his last two starts. Victor does take the wide route more often than not. And I think that this jockey switch to Juan Hernandez is a good move. Hernandez, he's never ridden at Churchill Downs. He's never ridden in the Kentucky Derby. But one thing about Juan Hernandez, he is about as cool of a customer as you could possibly meet. Nothing gets him flustered. You might suspect that a guy riding in his first Kentucky Derby would wash out a little bit, maybe get nervous. If Juan Hernandez gets nervous, he sure hides it well. He's about as cool as you get. Has he won any big races outside the state of California? No, not really, but he hasn't had the opportunity yet. He's only been in Southern California for the last couple of years. He has emerged as the dominant rider on this circuit, and Juan Hernandez is going to get his chance to show to the country and the world how good of a rider he really is. So Hernandez worked Skinner last week. They got along well. Skinner finished like a freight train in the workout, galloped out with so much energy that Hernandez could barely pull him up, and I think it's a good move, and I think that they're going to run super on Saturday, and like I said, we'll find out if he is good enough to defeat a very evenly matched field.
You know, I'll make one other comment, Brad, that you can, I'm sure you'll appreciate, and that is that John Sheriff's, when Skinner ended up being, you know, in the low 20s in terms of the point standings and not an automatic qualifier for the Derby, the fact that Sheriff's was vocal about wanting to get in and wanting to get him here, I thought is telling, because guys like Sheriff's and Mandela, if there was an exit ramp with their young horse to take, they've been known to take it. And so the fact that Sheriff's wanted in, and of course, you know, for the Searings, it's a big opportunity as well. They've won big races, but this would be very special. it seemed to me that Sheriff's eagerness plays into some decision-making.
Everything that John Sheriff has done in his management of Skinner has been a telling signal how highly regarded this son of Curlin really is. His debut was a fifth-place finish in a 10-horse field at Del Mar. What did he do in his next start? He was in the Grade 1 Del Mar Futurity, and he ran well, finishing third. So that was a very aggressive placement by Sheriffs to run a maiden second-time starter in the Del Mar Futurity, and Skinner acquitted himself well. Misfired next time out. This winter and spring at Santa Anita, Skinner has just gone from strength to strength. He came back 8 days after the, 9 days after the Santa Anita Derby with a half-mile workout. 6 days later, another three-quarters. 6 days after that, another three-quarters with a super gallop out. This horse is getting better. He is strong. He finishes. He wants the distance. And, you know, Sheriff's has recognized early on this is a colt with a lot of potential, and I think the Sheriff's has done everything he possibly can to have him run the best race of his career in the Kentucky Derby, and I'm sure glad he's getting the opportunity to do that. So yeah, Skinner is well regarded, well trained, and he will run his race on Saturday.
Brad, who else do you use as a win candidate beyond Skinner, or as exotic players underneath?
Yeah, I like the win by Angel of Empire last time out in the Arkansas Derby. I'm not sure what was behind him that day, but when you win a Grade One by more than four lengths going away, that's kind of an impressive win. The buyer speed figure came back a little bit on the soft side. He got a 94, but the truth is this year's Derby field does not include very many fast horses by numbers. So I think that Angel of Empire fits in this situation. I like two fills. I'm going to take that 101 synthetic surface buyer at face value. Maybe he's a synthetic surface specialist, but two fills ran well in previous dirt races, and maybe he's a three-year-old that is just now starting to get good. I respect Dermasota Gaki. And then for a real crazy, crazy price, and I don't think he'll be 50-1, but I can see Johnny Velasquez putting Reincarnate on the lead in Derby that looks like a little bit light on speed. And if Reincarnate can somehow run back to his Sham Stakes in early January, I think he has a crazy chance to at least outrun his odds. So my top four in order: Skinner, Angel of Empire, two fills, and Reincarnate, and Dermasota Gaki scares me. So that's a quarter of the field. Hopefully the winner's in there somewhere.
Well, and this is the kind of race where, depending on how you like to bet, you utilize as many as you think it's going to take to cash your ticket at, the budget and your approach. Speaking of approaches, I wanted you, who is as good a ticket structure and as good at identifying win candidates as anybody of your generation, to give us the $3 pick three for the three-year-old races, the Pat Day Mile, the American Turf, and then leading into the Derby. But let's talk about the first two legs.
Well, the Pat Day Mile is race number 8 on Saturday, and the more I look at this race, I wonder who in this field is going to run early with Kangaroo Court. Kangaroo Court, to me, is the speed of the field. You look at his form, you go, oh, he's just a cowbred running in cowbred stakes. The horse that he defeated in two successive races in California is a very good horse, a horse by the name of Bus Buzz, who earned a 93 buyer in his debut and then a 91 second time out. Kangaroo Court is capable of going 21 and change, 44 flat. There's no other horse in this Pat Day Mile that can run with Kangaroo Court early. So I'm going to lean on Kangaroo Court. I'm going to play two different tickets. One's a $27 ticket. The other one's a $36 ticket. And on one of the tickets, I'm going to single Kangaroo Court. And on another ticket, I'm going to spread a little bit using Fort Bragg on the route to sprint angle. He set the pace in the Florida Derby. The 1-2 finishers rallied from 9th and 12th. So Fort Bragg had the race shape against him. He's making his third start back off of a layoff, route to sprint, taking a drop in class, and if the pace does collapse, I can see Fort Bragg benefiting from the shorter distance. And then just for a crazy horse, number 10, Curly Jack. He loves Churchill Downs, three starts at Churchill, two wins and a second. Not quite Kentucky Derby caliber. He was up the track in both the Risen Star and the Louisiana Derby. This is a softer bunch, a shorter trip over a track that he loves. So Kangaroo Court, Fort Bragg, and Curly Jack are the three that I'll be using in the Pat Day Mile. And then on a ticket that has those three, I'm going to be singling out to Skinner. As far as the Grade 2 American Turf, which is race number 9, boy, the morning line in this race is all over the place. A very unusual price making in this Grade 2 grass race. But I like Talk of the Nation, whose win last time out in the Columbia was a fast win, validated win. The runner-up Mo Stash came back to win. California Shipper Johannes. I know he only had three horses behind him last time out, but he was decisive in his victory, and he won by three. He earned a good number. I think he might fit in this group. And then finally, number 11, Carl Spackler, who is being very ambitiously placed from a maiden win straight into a Grade 2 by trainer Chad Brown. He ran his final quarter in 22.73 last time out, Carl Spackler did. And yes, he was 1-5, and maybe there wasn't much behind him, but it speaks volumes to me that Chad Brown is going from a maiden win into a graded stakes race with this lightly raced colt, Carl Spackler. So I'll be using Talk of the Nation, Johannes, and Carl Spackler in the middle. And then to cash out, if Kangaroo Court wins and I'm live going in to get past the American Turf, I'll be four deep going into the Kentucky Derby with two fills, Skinner, Angel of Empire, and Dermisoda Gaki. If Kangaroo Court misses in the Pat Day Mile, I'm going to need either Fort Bragg or Curly Jack to win, and then I'll be singled out to Skinner. So it's a $63 play. The first ticket singling Kangaroo Court is a $36 ticket. The second ticket singling Skinner, $27 ticket. There's a chance to hit it twice if both Kangaroo Court and Skinner should possibly win. The chances of that happening are remote, but you got to put yourself in position to, if you happen to be right, you can make a nice little score. So Kangaroo Court in the Pat Day Mile and Skinner in the Derby are the two horses I'll be leaning on most heavily.
Outstanding. And Tim Yakteen could be off the board in the Derby, but if Kangaroo Court and Johannes can win, it'll still be a productive trip to Kentucky.
No doubt about it. And by the way, his Santa Anita Derby winner, Practical Move, is a very good horse. I'm not sure if he really wants a mile and a quarter, but he showed some grit last time out, holding off Mandarin Hero and Skinner the length of the lane. Neither of those two colts got by Practical Move on the gallop out. I might be underrating Practical Move in the Kentucky Derby. He's a very good horse, and it won't surprise me if he wins. I'm not using him. Don't really like him, but certainly do respect Practical Move in the Derby.
Brad Free, everybody. And Brad, your Oaks pick for tomorrow.
I was hoping you would get through this segment and not ask me. I looked through this race and I really don't have a clue. I'm not interested in wet paint at 5-2. I guess if I had to take a shot, it would be the Alice Look, who worked heads up with wet paint on April 27th at Churchill Downs. Her comeback in the Fairgrounds Oaks was very disappointing, talking about the Alice Look. She was dead on the board and she just ran around the track and just did not do much. I'm going to hopefully assume that she needed the race, that she has a license to move forward, second start back. In a wide open scramble, I would probably take a little flyer on the Alice Look, but that's with zero conviction whatsoever. I don't think this Oaks field is that great. I would love to have seen Faiza in here. I think she'd be one of the favorites, the Bob Gaffer trained undefeated filly from California. She's clearly not in the field, but it's a wide open, evenly matched Oaks field, very similar to the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to take a stab with the Alice Look at 15-1.
Brad Free, everybody, the author of Handicapping 101. Brad, good luck this weekend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Brad Free, folks, and he's so good. And I tell you what, a little bit of a home, a little bit of a home cooking, a little bit of West Coast style, the handicapping stylings.
Who'd he pick to win the Derby?
Skinner.
Wow.
Looking for John Sheriffs to garner another one.
Wow.
and bolster his Hall of Fame candidacy next year.
You know, I've been a Hall of Fame voter for probably 30 years. And you know who I recommend? Once in a while, I'll recommend somebody. Wesley Ward.
As a candidate.
Look at all he's done. He led the breakthrough of America guys going over to Royal Ascot.
Yep.
He's dominated Keeneland with two-year-olds like no other. He's won, what, four, five, six Breeders' Cup races? Maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
2,500 wins. You know.
I think he's got to add
like
another dimension.
Like the Derby?
I mean, well, a little something. He's got...
Anyway,
I think he needs a little more enhancement.
Yeah, well, he didn't make the ballot, but, you know, he's got a lot of
needs
angles.
Some garnish.
Plus, he was an Eclipse Award-winning jockey.
Yes, he was.
There's a lot of layers to his career.
All right. One of the most liked and a guy that helps everybody that needs help around.
He told me he'd ride Talamo at Keeneland, but he didn't. So. But he had to get Irad and Joel.
So. Marty, we got 10 minutes because I know you're buried, and we got a full second hour, of course, coming up as well. But I'm lucky that we're going to have you Saturday on your last day as a professional turf writer. This technically would be the last turf writing visit. I think I already gushed and provided a maudlin salutation weeks ago. And I don't want to get misty, but you've been one of my favorites, and you've been so good to me for a long time. And
guys, he's tearing up.
You'll be so missed. It's just what you bring to it is so special, and you're one of the people that everybody, you know, just everybody appreciates and loves, and you know, like Jay, a health scare that shook everybody up, and it won't be the same. It's not the same without Jay. It won't be the same without you.
Well, thank you a lot. It's been kind of a surreal week to this minute. Just receiving congratulations and well wishes, and you can just tell people are really, really happy for me. And that touches me very deeply. And as you know, I've written pretty much my last advance for the form. We'll write some recaps today, tomorrow, and Saturday, and then on to the next chapter. I'm actually going to put out about a 600-word short and sweet kind of goodbye. And I've been actually in the process of writing that this morning. And at the same time, you know, you got to have hope, and you got to have something to look forward to, fulfillment. You know, I know a lot of people lack that in their lives, and I just feel very blessed and fortunate to always seem to have that in my life. And
you got a pair of wonderful children. You've had award-winning career as a writer, and now you got a new adventure, which is, at this stage, we're the same age. I'm a little more mature, a little older.
One day, ladies and gentlemen,
that's got to be exciting. Actually, thinking about.
You know, there's a multitude of reasons that I'm making this move. One of them is I'm just exhausted from having written for as long as, 38 years in the business. And it just, you never really think about retiring until it kind of comes around. And you go, you know what? I think it's time. So that's what I came to. And, but Joe Talamo, to me, is a remarkable talent. We all know that from having witnessed his career that dates back to when he was 16. He's now 33. He's got a lot of riding left in him. I've only got one call in the book for today's going to be my first day on the Zoom draw for the Churchill draw, and I've got one lousy call for it. Actually, Tommy Drury, so it's not lousy. Tommy texted me about 5:45 this morning with an extra six for Thursday. I don't expect much early, but as Ron Anderson told me, Ron's more or less been my mentor throughout this process for years. Actually, we go back to the late 80s when he was friends with Ron Ellis and my sister, and so it's, you know, actually in 2019 I stayed in his condo the whole Gulfstream meet for right there on Pierce Street at Hollywood Beach, and Ron and I go way back, and he hasn't showed me all his tricks, as I say about my brother. I taught him everything he knows, not everything I know, but everything he knows. You know, Ron taught me everything I know about being an agent, and I'm sure I'm going to get my, you know, I'll get my teeth kicked in a time or two along the way. And I've already told you, I've already made a mistake. I blew getting a call done for my brother during the Keeneland meet. Totally forgot it. And I said, well, there's my first mistake out of the way.
But I love that. That's great. For your brother, no less.
I hope they win today. This is actually my first paid call for Joe. Is Miles Ahead in race 9. The Foleys versus the McGees with Bango versus Miles Ahead today in race number 9. So
St. Matthews.
Yeah, this is my first one.
The opening verse as well, the other stake where Annapolis shows up in a listed stake, pretty crazy. Racing so far has been okay. Well, Marty, let's dive in and get a couple of thoughts, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to have conversations with Marty McGee as a jock agent, but the turf riding ones, this is the last. So you got to go out with a hat full of winners for everybody.
I hope so. I love the Saturday card. There's that horse of Shug's is running in the American Turf. The horse that
Talk of the Nation
at Tampa. He was tremendous.
Yes, he was.
And they got him 10-1 on the line, I think.
That's about a silly number.
Yeah, about 4-1 is about right. And I like him, and I like, who's another one? Al Stahl's bringing back the horse, Mask Parade. He's going to win, I think. And then, you know, as much as I respect Forte, I think that Tappet Trice, I know there's a lot of support for him. He's kind of the, if you're a non-chalker, then you always weasel into the second pick, and I've got Tappet Trice. But, you know, having seen him win at Tampa and then the way he won the Bluegrass.
Yep.
He's got that pedigree that I love. And and he's also walking out of Barn 39, which my brother was in Barn 39 since the late 90s. And finally this year, they emptied it out and gave it all to Pletcher. So, that, you know, that's a bit of serendipity or irony or whatever you'd call it. You know, and that's what I'm writing about actually in my farewell is the Derby winner might actually walk out of Barn 39 this year. So, and, you know, Todd Pletcher, it's hard, Steve. It's hard to be famous because, you know, I've got about 1/100th of the measure of fame that he's got, and it's hard. People, you know, you got people grabbing you on the sleeve from here, there, poking you, interrupting. You know, just imagine how hard it is to be a Baffert or a Pletcher or an Asmussen. And Todd has handled it about as well as anybody I've ever seen. He's always been respectful. I've dealt with him, you know, probably hundreds of times over the years. And, you know, I've never seen him really get angry. And, you know, just I kind of hope he wins.
One thing I've always mentioned, you do something that has always makes me smile, which is your best bet on Derby Day
always
is your Derby pick. It's always been that way.
I started that in when I was first riding for the Sun. The first one I picked, I think, was 86. And I forget who it was, but I did pick Masterful Advocate as my best bet in 1987. And, of course, he was nowhere to be found, but behind Ali Sheba and bet twice. But I've just always made it a tradition. And the year I picked Fusaichi Pegasus, Scott Cooper, who used to be an agent for the racing form, a marketing agent.
I know, Coop.
He happened to be there when somebody said, "Hey, Marty, you made Foo Peg your best bet." Wait, you know, and Cooper just got a big kick out of that. You know, it's like, dude, I make the Derby my best bet every year. So.
Tapit Trice for Marty with Mage and Verifying. And, of course, Verifying got a little extra work in this morning. None of us can remember a horse getting loose, a Derby horse getting loose.
No, I don't. But wasn't it kind of short, what he run off, about a quarter of a mile?
Half a mile, yeah. Maybe. Now and he wasn't even running hard, actually. He was kind of loping.
Yeah. But that filly, and tell me no lies, I happened to be on the backside when that happened. I didn't see it, but somebody said she came flying through the backside area and barely missed a car and a security guard bike on both sides. So hopefully she's okay.
She went right to her stall, apparently.
Wow. Well, they all do that.
Well, she's only been here a week.
Yeah.
How does she even know?
It's amazing.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
How about the Oaks? What's your play tomorrow?
Brad Cox. I picked the Chris Landeros mount. Tell me what her name is. I don't have it in front of me.
Botanical.
Yeah.
Who's had a very good week.
My handicapping has been lacking this week, given all the different things I'm trying to do.
Being drawn in a lot of directions.
Botanical. And if she doesn't win, I would be, just because Wet Paint ran so often on a wet track and might not have beaten much, I would be skeptical about her. But Botanical, the way she's been running, she's also coming off the
turf,
and so who knows? But I think Brad is, Brad's done a lot for me too. You know, hopefully he'll ride Talamo a little bit. And anyway, I'm not trying to leverage my relationship. Well, I guess I am trying to just trying to leverage my relationships, but not in the way you might think.
Botanical, Defining Purpose, and Wet Paint for you in the Oaks. And Defining Purpose looks very good. I mean, she's managed to work her way onto my ticket.
I'd like to see Kenny win. He's just
3 seconds in this race.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Marty, thank you.
All right, buddy. Love you, man.
I love you, too. You're the best. And we'll be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we'll get some recapping in with you next week.
Okay, that'll be good. All right, I have more time.
And a Cottage Inn visit. Those frog legs are waiting to jump out of the pan.
Haven't had them since the last time you and I went. Thanks, my man.
Marty McGee, everybody. The last appearance. The Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority.
Since 1894.
Since Marty McGee was in short pants, as Jay Pridman might say. Andy Serling's going to join us. Let's get Andy in here, and Jay Pridman will join us in short order, actually, after Andy. So we're suddenly and somehow I've managed to get the train back on the track. This is a good sign. Marty gave me his new card. And we're excited for his new adventure. Andy Serling is on his way to Louisville to enjoy.
No, I'm not.
No?
I'm in my apartment in New York. Does that count?
It sort of does.
Everybody's always on their way to Louisville?
Everybody's going to be here. Everybody in the industry will be here.
Maybe I should reconsider.
Andy, I know you got a tight schedule. So let me get down to things. It's also opening day at Belmont. We should slip that in.
I haven't looked, so that won't really help.
No. Just the season. You know, we're back.
It is opening day at Belmont. That's correct.
Exactly. And the good Westchester tomorrow, Sheepshead Bay. Then I haven't looked at the Saturday card yet, but we're underway, leading toward the Belmont Festival, and it should be a great Belmont week. Andy, some thoughts. Let's start with the Derby and maybe pick a couple of other things to talk about. But how'd you land the Derby?
I don't know. I don't want to discourage people from watching my videos. You know, I need all the hits I can get. I think it's a wide open race. I mean, I don't really think there's. I think the people out there that are making these sort of definitive statements that, you know, some horse Forte can't lose or something, they haven't looked at the race. Or they haven't looked at it objectively because the race is wide open. I mean, I think if you go through the field, I don't have any real problem with somebody making cases for up to 15 of the horses for being horses that are at least contenders to be used somewhere in the top three or four slots. I think there's merits to the vast majority of the horses in the race. It's probably just the kind of race where I think you have to make some decisions on who the horses you're more interested in betting and ask yourself what you think the fair prices are on these horses, or roughly some idea of what you would accept as a reasonable price on them, and then be ready to bet ones that are overlays, if there are some.
Right.
And it'll probably be a somewhat unusually bet race because of last year and, you know, the rich strike effect, in the sense that it'll sort of bring down the prices on the outliers. So I don't know. I mean, I'm interested in two fills. I think of Todd's horses, I prefer Tappa Trice. I like the Bluegrass as a race. But I think if you like Tappa Trice, you're supposed to be ready to accept a much bigger price on Verifying. And while I have genuine concerns that Verifying is a horse that probably won't get better with more distance, if he's 18-1, I think you're getting paid to find out. So I think he's usable. I think Hit Show is usable. I think Angel of Empire is a very logical horse in this race. I liked his last few races. I mean, to me, the horses that'll take money that wouldn't be on my tickets are Forte and Dermisotagaki. I respect Forte, but I don't like his last race. I do think that Mage ran a better race. If Mage had more seasoning, I think Mage would be the horse to beat in this race. But tough to win off this three races. But once again, if he's a horse that gets lost in the shuffle somewhere, he might even be usable. It's a horse that has trouble getting out of the gate, but, you know, at any price, at the right price, pretty much any horse is usable. As far as Forte, I didn't like his last race. I don't like that he had to be ridden the whole way. I don't like that he took a step back from that race. Now, he's got a pretty good trainer, so he'll probably get him ready for his best race, but I'm not going to bet a horse as the favorite that has no real speed figure edge over most of the competition in the race. And Dermisotagaki, I admire his talent. I think he's very good, but I also think he's going to have to be forward in a race that's probably going to feature a reasonably contentious pace. And the lack of success, or I should say underperformance, of horses trying this Dubai route, shouldn't be lost on anyone, really. And so to take a shortest price on a horse that's trying to win maybe the toughest race in the world to win under less than ideal circumstances, not for me. You know, I wish that the confidence game hadn't missed
A race.
You know, hadn't missed a start, because I think his last race was terrific. But listen, I'm not taking him off of, you know, missing the start. And probably the best thing with him would have been to run to Lexington and point the Preakness. But I thought his last race was terrific, but I just can't take him off this kind of way into the Derby.
No, I love the way you frame all this, which is evaluate what you appreciate in these horses' form, and also take a reasonable negative understand what's negative about them, and then weigh the pricing, because the way this race is going to get bet, I think people are as interested and excited about odds opening for this, to see what the Japanese horse is going to be, as much as anything. It should be intriguing. I'm actually in the same camp as you. Two fills ended up being my selection, and I've got to tell you this, you'll laugh. I had Anthony Sagan, who bred the horse and got his father and his father's friend involved, Andy, and he asked me about you, and he said he learns more from you than anybody ever. He came from the harness game, and he's fairly new on the thoroughbred side, and he said Andy Serling teaches, if you listen to that show, said Andy teaches more than anybody.
I'm very sorry to hear that for him. Tell him he has my absolute sympathy. I'm sorry that in any way I've led him astray. I apologize from the deepest part of my heart.
I had forgotten to tell you that off air. So two fills, Tappa Trice, Hit Show, Angel of Empire, and a little Verifying, maybe?
I think Verifying second. I think he'll be an overlay in the race. You know, I was going to pick Tappa Trice second, but I thought if I'm going to pick him second, I'll put Verifying second, because I think he'll offer value in relative terms. I thought he ran very, very well in the Bluegrass, but they both ran well.
Well, and Hit Show, Andy, is your kind of horse too, right? Got, gets kind of dirtied up from that wood trip.
Yeah, and I have to, I gotta root a little for the home team. I gotta hope a little bit for the
I love it. All right.
that's the Derby look. What about tomorrow? We've kind of giggled a little bit about the Phillies all winter and spring waiting for one to get fast, and they just sort of didn't.
They didn't. I think that the favorites, Wet Paint and South Lawn, are both very logical horses. I picked them second and third because I just didn't feel like picking the favorites 1-2. But I don't have an argument against them. They're the horses to beat. I picked Pretty Mischievous. I don't like the post, but I thought might have moved a little too soon last time. Had a bit of a wide trip, and maybe it's good enough and maybe won't get such a bad trip from the outside, and that price is probably worth using in a price as my alternative. I didn't have a lot of clever ideas in that race. I think that Kennedy Peak's horse that won the Ashland is dangerous. If you're looking for a price, and there was one other horse that I thought was a little interesting. Oh, the two horse, the other Brad Cox horse.
The Alice Look.
Yeah, the horse ran fast enough two back that it's usable. But they would be the five that I'd be interested in there. I don't have a knock in the favorites. I know it's the first two choices. I don't think there's any reason you should.
What's the right price on Pretty Mischievous, having drawn that 14 hole?
12-1, like that.
Yeah.
Right now I'm just really focusing on the impending possible trip to Ascot for Classic Causeway. I hadn't realized the Prince of Wales had been turned back to a 7-furlong dirt race. So that's kind of the big news in racing. It's not really being discussed.
You're unbelievable. In looking at these cards and these stakes, anything else that jumped off at you the 2 days?
I thought that Caravelle found a good spot. What do you think of the Munnings Gold Caravelle double? That looked pretty good. Who did I like in the stakes? I don't have the PPs right in front of me, but
how about
I like
the American Turf, Andy, Carl Spackler, and Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, they're the right two, I think, in that race. I think they're probably the first and second choices. I thought they'd be the right two horses in there. That Turf Classic before the Derby, which I think has been downgraded to a grade three. What a race. It's quite a race. I like the Emotions horse on the outside there.
So did Nick Tamaro. Nick liked Bye Bye Melvin.
I know. We talked about it last night. We both liked him. I like that horse. I thought he was dangerous. I think the horse inside of him, Spooky
Channel.
Something.
Channel.
Spooky Channel is dangerous in there as well. Let's see what else. Churchill Downs handicap, I don't have if the favorite shows up, he's obviously going to win. The Pat Day Mile, I'm going to use Nick's horse. He likes Tom Amos's horse. Curly Jack, I liked Frosted Departure, and I was going to use Fort Bragg a little as well, but I like Frosted Departure. I don't want anybody to think I'm picking on all his horses. The Turf Sprint, I like Big Invasion.
Yeah.
The Knicks Go, I like Masca Parade. And that's about it.
All right.
And the last race on Friday, I like the Al Skull Maiden.
Huntress for Hire.
I like that horse. Had a big trip last time. Yeah, I like that horse.
8-1.
Ian Wilkes on the outside, the obvious horse, and also is Pitchcock.
Very nice. Though that's a nice 8-1 on Huntress for Hire. Pitch clock.
Only if it wins or runs second.
I like it. All right. Andy, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Steve, I'll be doing everything I can to hide from you.
There'll be 150,000 you can mingle in. I might miss you.
I'm actually planning on doing an actual head count on each day to find out how accurate and his figures really are.
See you later. Unbelievable. Oh, my God. He is just too much. Andy Serling, everybody. I tell you what, this train, speaking of headcounts, the train is right on schedule. Scully and Shapiro will join us at the bottom of the hour after the break, which sets up a very leisurely visit right about now, instantaneously, with Jay Privman. And it's not going to be rushed, and Jay can express all of his thoughts. This should be good, all right? And then we'll take a break at the bottom of the hour. And actually, gives me some leeway and some operating room for the second half, particularly the last hour. We will get to Rich Eng. Got to get to Rich, right? I should touch base with Tony and get a quick Tony Black hit in and get his picks. Brian Sanfratello, before we get off the air today, is going to stop by. They're all excited in Pennsylvania, as they should be, with Angel of Empire. So plenty to do, and we might get another one of the DRF. Dick Powell. Dick is going to join us by phone, actually, because he was here early morning, and since we couldn't get him on in the first hour, we'll get Dick on the phone later. Right now, standing by, Jay Privman. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Outstanding, Jay, and the only thing missing from the Derby run-up is you.
Well, I appreciate that. 10 to 39 of them, so I'm good. But been following from afar, so it's been best of both worlds.
Well, and as we mentioned separately last week, we're going to see you in Baltimore, so we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen earlier, but I guess on the official, I don't even know what to call myself, Jay, but as you DRF correspondents and veterans retire, I'm sort of the debarkation agent.
Yeah, I mean, of the late year 59 babies, you're the last one standing after Saturday when Marty exits. I was out first, and Marty, and you'll have to hold down the fort for us.
Unbelievable. Well, I got Sid Fernando, actually, too. Sid, it turns out Sid is in within our range later in December, so of 59. So
good. All right, I'm counting on the two of you to keep it going.
I appreciate it. I think I'm game. I've got low mileage on the tires because I came around late.
Yeah, I've got a lot of tread wear.
Jay, we've been tracking. I've been touching base with you as along the way through the winter and into the spring. And how would you characterize this Derby if you were writing about it?
You mean in terms of the group?
Yeah, the lead up and the intrigue, the stories. You know, the theme of this year's Derby.
I don't know that there's a theme. What would you call the theme? I think this is an okay group of horses. I don't know that there's anybody here who's a standout. Obviously, Forte actually is the best of them to this point. We'll see if his form is going to hold up or if he's on the other side of midnight, as my friend Gary Young likes to say, for a horse who's peaked and is on the downside, which is kind of where I've ended up on him. But in terms of just the overall quality, I think it's an okay group, but I don't think there's any... There's nobody here that I'm just really been completely dazzled by. There's the potential for some of these to be much better. I think certainly Tapitrice has already shown he's high quality, and I think there's even more there upside going forward. Beyond that, I think this is just a good, solid group, and I think that's what makes it really kind of an open race, that if you're right, you're going to get paid, because it could flop any number of ways.
How about the international intrigue?
I mean, that's certainly a major theme, not only of the Derby, but just of international racing in general, has been the success of the Japanese. And, the horse who won the UAE Derby, Derma Sertagaki, he's off that race. He's very live. But I thought he had things made to order for him that day that doesn't necessarily translate into what's going to happen on Saturday. But on form, he's certainly the best in-form horse that's ever arrived from Japan for the Kentucky Derby.
Well, that leads us to some decision making. How are you approaching the race, Jay?
I'm just going to fool around with some gimmicks and, you know, hope I get lucky. I'm fading for it, as you probably gathered from what I just referenced earlier. I was torn as to what to make of his Florida Derby, because on one hand, you know, he washed out before the race, but he still won. So you can look at it one of two ways. Either this is a horse who's maybe starting to tail off, or, you know, if you want to take a negative viewpoint, or the positive is that, boy, he wasn't even on his A game that day, and yet he still prevailed, which is the mark of a good horse. And I do think he's a good horse. My concern with him is that both of his works that I've seen since that race on video, to me, were just meh. And I just, my gut instinct is that maybe he's peaked and there's others who are on the ascension who can get him. And so that's why I'm going to fade him in this Derby. I like Pletcher's other horse, Tapitrice. I'm fearful that his value is going to not be there by Saturday. He seems to be a pretty popular horse of recent weeks based on the way he's trained. He needs to work out a trip from where he's drawn, but I just think he's got the right rider to have that happen. And to me, I think the potential best gamble in the race is the horse that I like second, if I was doing a top four rankings. I think Practical Move has just completely fallen through the cracks here. And on Figs and the kind of trip that he always manages to work out, to me, he's very live at a fair number. And if this horse was coming in trained by, you know, Baffert and ridden by Pratt, he'd be half the price he's going to be on Saturday. Both of his races at Santa Anita this winter I thought were terrific. He worked out good trips, but that's what horses with tactical speed do, who aren't reliant on pace and having to work through a lot of traffic. And I think he's very live.
So Tap It and Practical Move, if we're playing tries and supers, who else?
I like Skinner. I think that he's just the classic John Sheriff's type of horse who's used the prep races, as that word is defined, as preps, as building blocks. And I think he's going to run whatever he's capable of doing, you'll see on Saturday. I think he's just come up to this race in a classic Sheriff's fashion, and I think he'll run an excellent race. And the other horse that intrigues me, even though he comes out of, you know, the negative key race of the last two decades, the Wood Memorial, I just thought Hit Show was on the ascension prior to the Wood. And even though that race, to me, was a moderate at best field, I just think his value is going to be there in terms of his I think his chances are better than what his price will be, and so to me he's worth using on that in that context. But it's you know, it's an open race. I haven't mentioned several horses, so I'm sure many people would, you know, be behind, and I think it's that kind of a race. It's an open race, and hopefully if you can nail it, you're going to be rewarded for it. The one thing, Steve, that I'll say that I'm really I'm struggling with it, but not feeling like I have all the information, is from a veterinarian standpoint. You know, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission hasn't updated their vet list since April 25th, which is 9 days ago. And there's some horses on here who look like they got legal injections. You know, it's perfectly legal to do this. But like, for instance, all of Brad Cox's horses are on here, and they come off on Derby Day, which is, it doesn't say what happened to them, but that's usually the timetable that happens with a horse getting a legal injection, and that's all fine. But there's no Pletcher horses on this list, and I know that that's usually part of his MO for training. Again, it's perfectly legal, it's all within the rules, but the fact that this list hasn't been updated for 9 days leaves me wondering, you know, were his horses treated? And I don't know, and that's something that's, you know, for a commission that has said, oh, we're going to be transparent, this is anything but. And that's, to me, inexcusable the week of the biggest race in the country, let alone that state.
And on that topic, too, for those that that haven't had a chance in this first hour and a half to follow up from yesterday's comments regarding the two Saffy Joseph horses, but there was extensive activity after we got off the air yesterday, including a statement from Churchill expressing their dismay and their, frankly, you could tell, their unhappiness with the circumstance. They also rightly have to wait and respond to the KHRC and the KHRC's portion of this via Matt Hegarty's outstanding reporting. If you have not seen Hegarty's piece, it is comprehensive. And Matt was gathering the information with the help of Dave Grenning yesterday, and so he couldn't join us on the air. And then today, you know, we're handicapping oriented, and there's really not more to report other than a continuing investigation, necropsy results on the two horses that had cardiac episodes won't be ready for a period of time. Necropsies don't happen overnight. So everybody, as I said yesterday, which is terminology that was given to me by you know, the different entities that I approached, answers were being sought so that reasonable responses could be brought forth. And that includes legal counsel for Churchill Downs themselves. I can tell you that they are, you know, palpating and watching Hit Show jog. It'll be, he'll be under scrutiny the next 36 hours. So
Hit Show or Lord Miles?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, not Hit Show. Lord Miles, who beat him in the wood. And regarding regarding the Brad Cox horses, you know, the treatment even is as simple as hyaluronic acid. Things like Lubricin count toward that kind of placement on the vet list. And
and that's what I'm assuming, Steve, yeah, has happened with Cox's horses and why they're on there. And
yeah,
like I said, as you know, it's perfectly legal. I just feel like we're playing with one hand tied behind our back with a vet list that hasn't been updated in 9 days, you know, in particular regarding the Pletcher horses, but just generally regarding everyone.
Yep. No, agreed. Point well made, Jay. And actually reached out to members of the steward staff and KHRC. The medical director has been not made available for Q&A. So
right, yeah. Oh, you're completely transparent. Like, yeah, exactly. So my point, I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing. It's one thing to say something, but your actions always speak louder than your words. And that's what's happened here. You know, a lot of these entities talk a good game. Some of the racetracks that own tracks in, like, for instance, California, Florida, and Maryland talk a good game. But, you know, actions speak louder than words. And here's a specific, you know, real-time situation right now with the biggest race in the country, where, you know, what they say and what they do are at odds.
Jay, I greatly appreciate the topic being fleshed out. How about tomorrow? What are we doing on Friday with the Phillies?
I'll be you know, it's wet paint all right? I mean, I just...
All right, I get it.
As much as I think the Derby field is average, this to me is one of the, on overall talent, I think this is one of the weaker Oaks we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Outside maybe the one or two top horses. It falls off appreciably. And I haven't really formulated, you know, betting strategies. That's kind of, you know, one of the nice things, Steve, about being retired is I have a whole rest of the day to handicap Oaks and Derby Day. I just have,
well,
it's nice and early out here. I'm going to settle in, and then tomorrow I'll be ready to fire up the computer and just start firing. So I have not, I'm going to punt on, like, specific opinions in the Oaks because I just really haven't drilled down on it as much as I'd as I intend to by post time tomorrow.
Well, when I say that we miss having Jay to go out to eat with and to hang around with and talk to and be, you know, part of the scene, it also means that we miss Jay, who invariably during the fortnight leading up to this weekend would latch on to some unknown quantity just by watching the action through the binoculars. That there was always that Jay Pridman pulled out a plum like little Jack Horner.
Yeah, that's the one. I tell you, Steve, that's the one thing I miss most about just being retired in general, but certainly, you know, specific to this week, is just being out in the morning and just observing things. That's the one. I don't feel like I have as good a feel for things, and it's just natural. I'm not there. You know, I just don't feel like there's nothing replaces your own eyes on site seeing things. I mean, I can watch videos of works just as, you know, like everybody else can, but you really get a better feel for things just that little bit extra when you're actually on site, and that's the one thing I feel like I've really not I'm not as up to speed on as before. So I'm going to rely on you guys to, you know, to text me the steam on Oaks and Derby Day, since I can't be there to the firsthand to see it for myself.
You got it. It'll be our pleasure. And that leaves us with only two words as we exit our visit with Jay Pridman, and that is hi ho.
Hi ho.
Jay,
well, enjoy the rest of the week, and I look forward to seeing you at the second stop on the Triple Crown Trail. And let me know if the KHRC updates their vets list.
We'll talk to you before, though. We'll end up adding you to the recap lineup.
Sounds good. Have fun, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Jay Pridman, everybody. I have to fight the inclination to say DRF Pridman. I don't have to fight the inclination to say James_Scully111, although he hasn't tweeted in 8 years. Scott Schaap 34. Don't put that on. You got 2.5 minutes. Can I go to the bathroom? I've been yapping for 90 minutes. Unbelievable. They're ready. They used to sit. The blood is dripping from their fangs. Shapiro's gonna. His head's gonna explode like a Rock'em Sock'em robot. Listen, I'm in the bit. I've been in the bit for 90 minutes, and I delivered viral video of verifying this morning. Right? Am I the only one? How about that? Scully Shapiro, join us next. We'll go through the card. Scully's will be with us on Saturday, too. But what about you? You're no good tomorrow. No. All right, so you'll have to give some Saturday opinions, and you'll have to laugh after he leaves. Oh, really? Mostly Saturdays now? You don't have Friday picks? Today's Thursday. Unbelievable. I'll tell you what. Shapiro's you're like Quicksilver. You can't hold. You're like Mercury. You're all over the place. Back after this, the Churchill Downs. It's Thurby. Sirius XM at the races.